This week on the Nittany Dispatch, we discussed James Franklin's first Monday press conference of the season, building momentum off of last week's offensive performance, and the sign-stealing scandal at Michigan and how it can impact the game this weekend against Penn State. This week on the Nittany Dispatch. Hello and welcome to Nittany Dispatch. I am John Sauber of the Center Daily Times. She is Audrey Snyder of The Athletic. We are talking about Michigan week, and I don't want to drag out this intro too long because there is a lot, probably more than we had even anticipated, I don't know, a month ago.
Yeah, all the signs point to this being a really busy week, John.
There it is. That's should I start a
you
counter?
You knew it was coming. You definitely should. Times, yeah, that's one.
We dropped the word signs in here. How many?
That's two.
Times we talk about stealing.
Three.
But no, before we get too far into it, don't forget, rate, review, and subscribe to the podcast. Hit the like button down below. Hit the subscribe button down below if you're watching on YouTube. Leave those ratings and reviews on Apple Podcasts. But yeah, I mentioned we talked to James on Monday. Why did we do that? Because nothing that we
why?
Say
why did we, why. John? What was the point?
Because our opinions don't matter. I'm very excited for this to happen out of a bye week, and then everyone have to cut their bye week vacation short by a day. That'll be a lot of fun.
Yeah, that's a future us problem. Yes. This, I'll tell you what, the thing that messed with me was I'm just used to like Monday's kind of a slower day, and you know, it's like the closest thing we get to an off day during the season. So then Tuesday, right, we're recording this on Tuesday night. So all of Tuesday, like I kept thinking it was Monday, and then it was like we had player Zooms on Tuesday. So I alluded to it last week. I wouldn't know the days of the week. It's thrown me for a loop. I said to everybody on Monday, oh, I'll see you tomorrow at practice. No, practice is Wednesday. So, yeah, creatures of habit, John. Thing. We're not doing well.
That was my whole issue, the saying see you tomorrow to everyone. There's men's basketball opened their season last night, obviously covered that game. And every time I said goodbye to anyone, I said see you tomorrow. And they all said no. And I was like, right. It's like,
see you on Zoom tomorrow. That's what we can go with now.
Yeah, and it's just it's going to take a bit for me to adjust. I'm not going to lie. You know, you mentioned Monday is like an easier day. Like I pre-write all of my stuff on Monday to try and like lessen what are otherwise busy days like Tuesday through Thursday, especially and when it's away games, obviously we're traveling Fridays. But it was like so I didn't get a lot of my pre-writing done yesterday, which means I had to do it today, and I just like I couldn't get going, right? Like I had a hard time getting going. All that stuff we'll get done.
No, I think it's because I blame this on the Maryland trip and the 3:30 kick, John. That's what did all of this. It was the 3:30 kick messes with the sleep schedule. We've changed the clocks. It's now dark at 5 o'clock. We're unraveling right now.
I really did not like, I think I might have told you this already yesterday at the presser. I did not like that when I was driving home from Maryland after we recorded that my ETA was 1:45 a.m. and I looked at the clock and it was 1:57 or something like that. And I was like, what did I hit
what happened?
Black hole? Am I in a wormhole right now? Am I okay? And then it hit again. I was a little sleepy at that point, but ended
it's
up being
never good.
Just,
never good when you're up to see the clocks change, John. That's never like, a good sign. Yeah.
Well, here's the thing. That's me every time. It's way worse the other direction, by the way. It's way worse when it's like 1 o'clock and suddenly it's three and you're like, no, we're not doing that.
Well, that's I've always wondered, and I think one time I saw this in person, but like when you're out at a bar, right, on like the clock change day, it's like, what happens?
Do they close at one?
I think, do they or do they stay? Like, if it's the other way, I feel like they stay open maybe for an extra hour.
That's my guess.
I feel like I did
you know
that
what?
One time.
For the listener, I will put this to the test. I will gladly go out both times this in 2024.
We're gonna...
And I will find out for you, the listener, what time that bar closes.
Yeah, that's what we're going to have to do, John, because this is in the name of the listener here. We're here for you all. But yeah, it's been a busy week already. But I will say, John, our week is nothing compared to the folks who cover Michigan.
Yeah.
Whoo, boy. Like we've all had weeks where, you know, it's just like your team is the story and there's so much extra work and extra interest and extra eyeballs that come with it. So I do. And again, these are all journalists like us that are just trying to do the job, cover the game, get their paycheck and go on with their lives. Right. So their week has been absolutely derailed. And then by the end of it, you know, hey, you still have this massive matchup. We'll see the new rankings come out later tonight, Tuesday night. So we will actually see what both of these teams are ranked. But yeah, you're covering a marquee game on top of just a bizarre, like definitely
the biggest story in college football.
And the most bizarre. And like, this is a sport where there's a lot of weird shit that happens. And this is just like
all the
next
time.
Level. Yeah.
Yeah. My favorite thing that came out today was the Connor Stallions vacuum stuff. Mm-hmm. I don't know if you've seen this, but he bought a house in an HOA and neighbors called and complained because he had a bunch of vacuums on his porch. And apparently his defense was that it was a Michigan State fan that accused him of it to try and disturb his focus.
And there was a photo included with the story, too.
The photo is like some deranged stuff. Yeah, like nobody should have that many vacuums on the porch.
And to me, that's like the other part of this, too, is like, you know, we always hear about expanded staff sizes and like, what do some of these people do, right? And like, a lot of it, I don't know. But yes, but then you add this into it and you're like, Jim Harbaugh, like, how, why, like, what? You know, like what is Connor Stallion's background besides being a Michigan super fan and obviously have military ties, all these other things. But you're like, how weird was that interview? Maybe for Harbaugh, it was just like another day at the office. I don't know.
I was
going
to say he might have been in his element, I think, at that point. But no, we asked James yesterday, not you and I, another reporter asked James yesterday about the sign stealing, right? And I believe it was Mike Gross who asked it. Correct me if I'm wrong.
Yes. And then Neil Riddell later on asked about Harbaugh.
Yeah. But Mike asked first about like the sign stealing stuff and how it impacts them. And he kind of referred to what he had said in the past about how they adjust stuff anyways. You know, they adjust signs and they're very aware of that, essentially. Didn't really want to dive into it. Said less is more. And I understand not wanting to do that, right? Like, I understand not wanting to turn yourself into a headline in a story that is already, like, people are grabbing headlines left and right out of it.
And James Franklin's had that happen to him before this year.
Yes.
So I think he's very aware of that, right? And, like, the whole, we're just trying to go 1-0. But what I wanted to pull up, John, was actually Neil Riddell's questions. Neil asked James if he has any thoughts on the status of Jim Harbaugh, right? Because at some point this week, I think we're probably going to find out what the conference plans to do and kind of what the next steps are with this, right? So this, I got the answer pulled up in front of me. James Franklin says...
Started at the very beginning. The very beginning of this book.
All right, yeah, I was going to... James Franklin starts with, your flashlight is still on. Will somebody help him with the flashlight?
And Neil shout out to you, Audrey, for helping Neil shut his flashlight off.
I tried to reach over his shoulder for the flashlight. We tried to get the flashlight off, and then James
Rest
goes,
assured,
no,
we
eventually
Neil
got it off.
To voice memos as well. So this
there's a lot going on there.
That's right.
James goes, no, I was going to try to use that. The flashlight didn't work. Franklin goes, I'm focused on all the stuff I see on film. That's what we're focused on. All the stuff that we see on film, their plays, schemes, all the stuff. When I say see on film, we see on the coach's copy of the film, the stuff going on between the sidelines, the 53 1/3. That's what we're focused on. Wow. So wow. Is that ever passive aggressive? I took that as passive aggressive. Did you?
I think this might be being misinterpreted a little bit. I think James was realizing that he might have been saying something salacious by like saying what he sees on the coach's film. Then tried to clarify it with 53 1/3 because that's the
field,
right? The length is. I think it might have been intentional at first, and then he tried to backtrack it with the 53 1/3. I don't know. Mm-hmm. I don't take a ton from it. I'm sure that James is not thrilled with Michigan doing this, right?
Oh yeah,
they can't imagine.
I mean,
any coaches are at this point.
Man, what I would pay to be a fly on the wall for some of these conversations between Big Ten coaches, athletic directors, because it's one of those things where, and I was thinking back to the preseason, right, when Penn State had that open practice, and then it downpoured that delightful night.
Hard to forget it.
Yeah, one of the monumental nights, first open practice ever here for preseason, and it pours, but... I remember going into that, I asked Manny Diaz, I asked Mike Yurcich about just the concept of having an open practice, because that's unusual. Like, that is not something that Penn State does, even though a lot of programs are doing it. And let's be honest, I think Penn State only did it because Ohio State was doing something similar. It was tied in with the collective, right? So that's probably why Penn State did it. So anyway, But I asked Manny Diaz about it. And I was like, all right, well, obviously you've been a head coach before. Like, are you concerned about a setting like this where it is open to the public? And Manny Diaz just deadpanned to me and he goes, espionage, it's real. And I laughed because I was like, okay, like this, you know, like sounds a little extreme, but also like coaches, they're all paranoid. So whatever. But then you fast forward to where we are now and I'm like, huh, it makes you think.
Well, and then you had the Schiano interview at halftime of that Michigan game mm-hmm. when he basically said there's some stuff going on that's not okay. I don't remember the exact quote. It's something along those lines. Pretty clearly now intimating that what is allegedly to have happened was happening, right?
And I think, to me, the interesting thing with this, and I've seen so many takes on this, right? And I don't know what the correct answer is. Probably somewhere in the middle. But how much of an actual advantage is it, right? Because certainly there's an advantage to it. But when people want to say, well, that's the only reason why Michigan's winning, I don't buy that, right? Like, that's not the only reason. It certainly helps you. But, like, I think that's, like, the competitive balance of that to me is really interesting because, right, how do you quantify? And I know we did a story on The Athletic about it of how do you quantify the sign stealing, right? Like, how many wins does that maybe give you or how many points per game, right? I believe that the answer that we had reported, my colleagues at The Athletic was like, yeah, it's maybe good for like a touchdown a game or whatever. So you do kind of wonder, or at least I wonder about a lot of that stuff. But we do know that Penn State was one of the schools that, you know, we all saw, I think, the ESPN story about the UMass game.
One of the greatest story quotes from a source mm-hmm. that I've seen. I don't have it exactly in front of me, but essentially saying it was too cold and too rainy. They didn't pay me enough. I wasn't staying. Right.
So yeah, I'm not going to stay and film UMass because it's just not worth it. But yeah, so a lot of stuff going on at Michigan and I feel like we will know more definitely before Saturday. this is the most bizarre story in college sports right now. Definitely the most bizarre story in college football. And Penn State then is kind of thrown into it just because of, hey, you're playing Michigan this week. But as you mentioned, John, James Franklin did say coming out of the bye week that they like look at everything they do with their signals and how they do it. And the other thing too, and I've seen this mentioned quite a bit here in the last couple of days, people are saying, well, if we go to helmet communication, that'll just get rid of all of this. Well, James Franklin actually had talked about that day when he had mentioned, mixing up their signals coming out of the bye week or whatever it was. And his argument with that was like, well, we're still going to have signals, like, right. And like your defense, you're still going to have signaling. So like,
yeah,
it's not going to solve everything. And I do think that's one of the things, because this year bowl season, there is going to be like the wearable technology, right? Like we see in the NFL, they even approved where at bowl games, you'll see like the iPads or whatever. I don't know whoever the sponsor is. On the sideline. So maybe we'll get a great gif of Drew Aller throwing a tablet or something this bowl season.
That would be a fun time. Yeah. But no, I think it is interesting that you bring that up because it dovetails with something that Drew Aller was asked about this morning by Ben Jones and that people have noticed on social media, on message boards and all of that mm-hmm. about Aller wearing the play sheet wristband, right? With on this is left hand, right? I'm bad at this.
Believe so.
Yeah, believe it's his left hand. Left wrist, I should say, not left hand.
Yeah. Where's it right on funny his hand? Yeah.
Yes. But he's been doing this since the Ohio State game, right? That was the first game this season that happened. Last year, it was the case, we believe, for the last five games based on some wonderful research by...
Investigative reporting.
That's right. Investigative reporting with the help of Daniel Gallen of the Lions 24/7 too. And we dove into all of this, like tried to find all of when this was showing up. But
looking at old photos, because people ask what we do all day. Yeah.
That's right.
Does the quarterback have a wristband Can we see his left?
Got brought up, I was like, I went to my YouTube TV to see if I still had everything recorded from last year so I could go back and check Sean Clifford. I had this year's, was able to like verify all the stuff from this year. Like Ohio State, like was when it started. Like we don't know 100% for certain when Penn State knew about this being an mm-hmm. issue. But like that's right around when it was a problem.
Does make
right?
you wonder.
And James said in that answer that you mentioned that the way to fix it is to huddle, right? That's how mm-hmm. you stop people from stealing your signs. And what does having the plays on your wrist do? It allows you to huddle. And Drew mentioned that this morning, that like when you go into a huddle, instead of going tempo going straight to the line of scrimmage, the defense doesn't know your formation right away. They still know your personnel right away because they can see how many tight ends, running backs, receivers are in the huddle, but they don't know your formation. So it's harder to figure out what exactly you're doing if you're not coming out in the specific formation, especially with Penn State, with how much 12 personnel they run. Like, they run a lot of stuff out of 12 personnel when it would, it looks like 11 personnel stuff because they split a tight end out wide pretty frequently. It looks like 21 personnel sometimes because they bring tight ends into the backfield. So they do a lot of stuff out of the same personnel grouping. So that can, I think, you know, it's pretty clear that that can help pretty in a pretty significant way with preventing like sign stealing. I'll be curious to see how much Penn State huddles this weekend. Like, I don't have, like, I haven't gone
it's
back.
It's a genuine watched, like, question. Like, it is a genuine question that James Franklin needs to get asked Wednesday night, which, you know, again, splicing and dicing here, but had it been reversed, we would have talked to Drew first, then we would have asked James Franklin this Tuesday, but here we are. Yep. But no, I do think it's a really interesting point, and it's going to be something to monitor. And yeah, like, this is, you start doing it. Well, why? Right. Well, then I guess you can also raise the question, John, well, if they did it last year, why did they do it last year? Right. Cause then,
there are other Drew variables said, that play with that.
Right. Cause Drew said like, it kind of helped get the offense on the same page a little bit, but obviously with a sixth year quarterback last year, presumably in the same year in the offense for the first time ever for Sean Clifford, right? Like, it was a different scenario.
And it was right after the Ohio State game last year when it started. That Indiana game was the week after when it started. So I don't know if they felt like they needed to get the offense, you know, on the same page after that. Like, you know, they played well offensively against Ohio State outside of like three turnovers.
The trend is here. The program hits rock bottom against Ohio State and then something changes after that game.
But they did have the wristband on for Ohio State. So I think that's interesting too this year.
How that worked. So,
But so I do think this is going to impact things. Mm-hmm. The sign stealing, the whole situation, because even if Michigan wins, like, you're always going to probably rightfully be able to question how much of an unfair advantage did they have, mm-hmm. right? Like, and that's kind of the whole thing with this, right? I've seen a lot of people say like, well, people were stealing signs from Michigan. Let's be clear about something. Everybody's stealing everybody's signs. Everyone. In all of college football, they're trying to steal signs, right? Like, it just is what it is. They all don't have a staffer who allegedly is sending other people to games, buying them tickets, and having them record from the sideline. That is illegal. It's advanced. It's illegal.
What's,
in the NCAA.
What's the going rate? Is what I need to know.
Yeah, I know. Honestly, like, I'm gonna watch football.
What's the going rate?
It's not happening like that everywhere. And that is the real issue here. I've seen some of the reporting with, like, you know, clearly trying to help Michigan out, like with the, teams X and Y also had Michigan signals decoded, you know, by the time the game started. It's like, sure, maybe that's just from watching the coaches copy, right? And then they try and marry it up with the signals they're seeing. That's much harder to do when you don't have a full visual of the front of the sideline. Like, you get when you do what they were allegedly doing. So yeah, I think,
you know what, John, it does raise the question too. We hear so much about, you know, expanding the staff sizes and all these analysts in the building, and right, and James Franklin's been one of the many people who says, hey, look at Georgia has this many people, we need to have that many people. And I get that, right? Because you're trying to compete in every single area of your program. But it also raises the question, one that we've raised many times, is like, what the hell do half of these people do? And that's where I think, as a program, Michigan, you open yourself up to some of these things, because again, you are ultimately responsible. If this is your employee, you are responsible, right?
Yes.
And so
that's why I don't buy any of the, like, Harbaugh can say all he wants, he was unaware of these things. Well, then that's negligence, because it's your mm-hmm. job to be responsible of what your employees are doing. Like, you are their boss. Yeah. You are what they make, the mistakes they make are your fault too, right? Like, that is
yeah. part of it. Fair or not, if it happens in your building, you're the boss, like, yeah, that's on you. So I do think that's going to be quite the storyline to follow.
We're 20 minutes in and we haven't even talked about football.
I was going to say,
like,
we're
dominating this storyline. Has been in the entire sport.
The whole sign stealing thing has been occupying a lot of our brain space. But shifting it back to State College a little bit and reprogramming my mind here.
That's right.
We talked to James Franklin Monday. We got the Maryland review, which I don't know if you caught this today, but Maryland got beat so bad that Mike Locksley said they weren't even going to watch the film.
Yes. I mean,
oof, what an admission. Dude,
don't, like, don't listen, that can be the case. Don't tell people that.
Yeah. you got it handed to you so bad that there was no benefit to watching the film because it was that bad.
Yeah. And it was for them at every level. But the bright side for Penn State is, like, this is, and we talked about it a little bit post game, but this is a real opportunity to build off of it. And I don't know that they have to be like, okay, now the offense has to take the next step, right? If the offense is like 60%,
I don't know how many steps they have.
Yeah, true. If the offense this coming Saturday is 60% of what it was against Maryland, they're probably going to win, right? Like that is how far and away the Maryland performance was ahead of what they've done all season. You know, like they do not have to be at that level to win this game. If they are, like, they'll probably win going away. But I do think this offense needs to be like much closer to that than what it was against Indiana. And we talked about, by the way, the potential for a turning point after, you know, that 57-yard touchdown to Keandre Lambert-Smith being a turning point for the offense. And like the validity of that only increases with a performance like the one against Maryland. And now, like, they have to do it. They have to show that that wasn't a one-off last week, that, you know, it wasn't just, you know, unfounded confidence because they were playing a bad defense. Maryland's defense, by the way, is not that bad. Like, it's, I think, 31st last I checked in SP Plus. I haven't checked after the matchup, but before, I believe it was 31st. Yeah,
trending down now.
Yeah. But I do think that, like, this offense is taking some major steps forward, and I think pretty much all of it has to do with Dante Cephas and Drew Aller. Let's take a short break from the podcast to tell you about the good people at Voodoo Brewing Company in State College. Voodoo, a place that you and I go to frequently, as we've mentioned here time and time again. Both of us love their beer, love the people there. Wes and Josh, both great people behind the bar there, despite Wes being a Steelers fan, Josh being a Bears fan. These are things that you look past when good beer is on the table.
Yeah, it's enough that I can look past it, John. It's been tough.
Listen, you're a Packers fan too.
So I go in there sometimes in my Bears Still Suck t-shirt just to make sure they know that I'm there for the beer and nothing else. Although sometimes I do get the food too, so I shouldn't say that. And the view is pretty great too. I do enjoy the view. If you haven't checked out Voodoo Brewery, I think it's definitely one you want to work into your State College rotation. If you're visiting for the game this weekend, be sure to go by and check them out. Get yourself some beer. You can also get beer to go as well. So maybe take it with you tailgating if you so choose.
That's right. And you mentioned the kitchen. They're now serving food there at Voodoo. Every Tuesday, you can join them for pub trivia. Every Thursday, you can join them at bingo. Both of those are at 6 p.m. And the cold weather is slowly but surely coming. They will have the fire pits out, which we all very much enjoy. So check them out. Voodoo Brewing Company at 201 Elmwood Street in State College. Back to the pod.
When Drew Aller spoke to us on Tuesday, he said that, he feels confident. He feels comfortable with Dante Cephas, talking with Cephas after the game and also the middle of last week. Cephas certainly sounds, feels, looks comfortable here. Like, it's taken time. And I remember writing that, you know, especially in the offseason, early in the season, saying, hey, it's going to take a few weeks, I think, for this guy to get it going. I didn't think it would take a half a season. I thought maybe a quarter of a season. But regardless, they're here now. The other thing, John, that I wanted to make sure we got on, because I thought this was interesting. James Franklin was asked about the running back rotation, right? And essentially, are you going to give Catron Allen more carries? Because you and I are now aligned on this, on the the feed fat man train, I think that's what we'll call it.
Some people came around a little later than others.
Some of us are still leading the Noah Cain train, but on the feed fat train, it was James Franklin said that essentially they like what they're doing. They like their plan. They like splitting reps, splitting series. It does not sound like anything is going to change. Now, if something was going to change, he would definitely not tell us at the press conference going into the Michigan game. So I get that. The snap counts will tell the story. But looking at the snap counts after the game, when I got back Sunday looking at him, it was just about a 50-50 split again between the two running backs. So, you know, we see the explosive element with Singleton as the kick returner, right? Like, that was a significant moment. James Franklin mentioned it as such against Maryland. But it doesn't sound like, at least reading between the lines, that we're going to see Catron Allen take on, you know, the bulk of those snaps out of the backfield. Is that the right call, John? Would you be feeding Fat Man more?
Yes. I do think it is interesting that
how much more? Despite,
I mean, I think 80% to 20% would be the distribution that I would go with. But I do think it's interesting that despite that similar snap count, that when Catron was out there, he was getting the ball more. He had 15 touches compared to 8 for Singleton, 14 carries and a catch for Catron, 8 carries for Singleton, no catches. And, you know, maybe that does point to they're kind of trying to balance out the snap load to keep everyone happy. But in all reality, Catron's the guy because when he's out there, he's touching the ball more frequently, right? Like he's just getting it more. I'll be curious to see how true that is this week. That's 15 to 8 is roughly like about 67%. It's a little less than that. I think it's like 65%. Math is hard and I am not
here to do math here.
Yeah, that's right. But I think that might be what it ends up looking like again against Michigan. If I had to guess, probably like 15 to 7-ish, you know, that range if they end up with around 22 carries. You know, and I get it. Like they have to keep both those guys happy. And Singleton is like a big play back who can break one off at a moment's notice. But to me right now, Catron's just better and you got to ride the hot hand and he's clearly the hot hand.
Yeah, no, I'm with you. Like it's the momentum piece. It's the hot hand piece. I just pulled them up, the snap counts for the receiving core, which this was interesting. We don't know anything new about Harrison Wallace. That's probably something we'll get into on Wednesday. If anything, if we see him at practice, if we don't. But without Harrison Wallace, you know, the receiving core, the final breakdown, Keandre Lambert-Smith led the way with 56 snaps, Dante Cephas with 54. And then the next highest receiver after that, which again speaks to 12 personnel, was Malik McClain with 17 snaps, Amari Evans 14, Liam Clifford 10, Caden Saunders 10, and Malik Mega with 2.
So again, some of that is swayed by
the end of the game. And
Yeah, some of it's swayed by all the garbage time at the end of the game. And you're right, though. We know, like, the top two, it was Lambert Smith and Wallace, and now it's clearly Lambert Smith and Cephas. Mm-hmm. And I think that is it's much closer to how I thought this would play out at the beginning of the season, right? Like, I've been saying that Cephas is going to have a breakout game every week since UMass, I think I started saying that. But, hey, it hit. Eventually, it was going to hit. I do think he is.
Even a broke clock is right twice a day, John. That was you.
Yeah. But I do think this one is going to stick for him, right? Like he's clearly more comfortable out there. Him and Drew are on the same page. What was really important to me was a lot of the success was on timing routes. And that is something we've seen at times. They've been off the mark this year on Illinois. If I remember correctly, that was a pretty big issue. I remember writing about that.
Yep.
This is, you know, if they're going to run a lot of timing routes, they need guys who that Drew Aller can trust will be there. And, you know, it seems that he trusts Lambert Smith and has all season. And now it seems that he can trust Cephas, who is good. Like, I think he is a good receiver. This was always the rub for me, right? Like, I thought he was a good receiver who was creating separation, but it just wasn't clicking between him and
you know what I wonder, John? I don't know the answer to this, but will Dante Cephas throw a pass? Is that maybe where this is headed?
No, please. No, I can't.
Sorry, too soon, too
don't
soon.
Don't make me stop making me watch receivers throw the football. I don't want to watch it.
I know this triggers you when I say it, so I had to say
it. Really
it does. I did ask Drew Aller this week about his thoughts on the Bo Pabula package and kind of how the debut went with that. And he just basically reiterated that, you know, that it's going to give the defense one more thing to prepare for and that there are, of course, other wrinkles, other variations off of the Bo Pabula package that I'm sure we're going to see at some point this year. We haven't spoken with Bo Pabula, so I have not had a chance to ask about the people who he embraced after the game and if they were family members or not. I haven't had the chance to ask the very important question of that.
I don't want anything to do with this still.
Yeah. So it might just be a mystery at this point. Yeah. I'm unclear where that kind of heads. But yeah, I mean, I think this whole thing is you have to build off of it with this offense, right? We've been saying it the entire time. I mean, you have a golden opportunity right here. The fact that your season, you have a chance to save it. You have a chance to throw the playoff into complete chaos. You have a chance to make people actually look at the Big Ten's convoluted tiebreaker scenarios, which I've already looked at. Also, you've gotten help from Iowa. So, like, again, a lot still has
and
to
Illinois.
Happen. Yes, a lot still has to happen, but you have to beat Michigan or else none of that matters, right? Because if, can you imagine, John, like if they beat Michigan, which that's a big, big, big if. I mean, the whole outlook, the whole trajectory changes. It also impacts what James Franklin was asked about this week. Again, like his record in big games. We know the numbers. We've talked about the numbers. We've written about the numbers. I'm pretty sure he knows the numbers, right?
I'd be surprised if he didn't. He seems to have his pulse on a lot of those things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it is – it's funny. We talked about the Ohio State game, about like how important it was for them to be an elite team, prove they're an elite team, prove they're an elite program, right? And how Ohio State has been like the boogeyman for the full decade.
Halloween was last week, John. I don't know what that is. That was last week, Halloween.
Fair enough. But they haven't been able to get over the Ohio State hill, right? Like this has been 10 years. They've beaten them once in a decade. That's not as true with Michigan. Michigan is 6-3, I believe, against James, which is still not great. It's funny having these conversations, I guess, for a second time, right? Because it is true, though. Like it doesn't, just because we've already talked
the
about
annual,
this kind of thing,
the annual occurrence, like, here that we're having this rehash. Yeah,
it's like it feels like going into Ohio State that, okay, they need this one, otherwise it doesn't, like, none of the other stuff matters, and then they lose it, and then they get to Michigan. It's like, well, if they get this one, like, maybe it doesn't matter, right?
Kinda.
That they didn't get the first one. And I think that's, you know, I'm doing a column on this week about how, like, you know, this doesn't prove that they're among the elite, I don't think, if they beat Michigan, but it at least proves that they're much closer to Ohio State than maybe we anticipated 2 weeks ago. Because that performance, by the way, was, I mean, it was so clearly their worst offensive one, or second worst maybe, with Indiana. Like that it's like, okay, is this an outlier? Is this really who they are? Right? Like there's a lot to sift through there and try and figure out what it actually means. Beating Michigan makes a good bit of that go away.
See, this has always been my thing the last few years that they've played Michigan. My theory, and we'll see if I'm proven correct or not on Saturday, but my theory has been there are certain teams that you match up better with, like in Ohio State, and there are certain teams that you do not. And Michigan, to me, is that team. And I wrote a column about this last year and said, basically, you know, what if the whole time Penn State's been worried about chasing Ohio State, and the real issue is that they're not built to withstand a powerful, you know, bulldozing type team like Michigan. And that is where I think this whole thing gets interesting to me, because what I asked James Franklin this week was about their mentality in the trenches, right? We hear it every year. Last year, he said going into the game, it was going to be big boy ball. Well, Penn State got completely bowled over in that game. So I asked him again, I said, you know, do you feel like there's been a mentality shift in the trenches? Because, I mean, let's recognize, right? Like, Penn State's defensive line, the defense as a whole, has been tremendous this year, right? Like something has changed. And so much of that talking point all offseason goes back to what I asked him, you know, in Ann Arbor last year, and said, hey, like, why does this keep happening when you guys play Michigan? Like, they just ran all over you. Why does it keep happening? And he pointed to the fact that, you know, they needed to be bigger in the trenches. And then once we heard from Manny Diaz in the offseason, he said, well, I don't think it's the size. I think it's more so we need to be more gap accountable. And Manny Diaz likes to use the phrase wearing capes. And that he told these guys all offseason, like, be you. We don't need you to wear too many capes, right? Just do your job, do it well, and you'll be okay. And so for me, Saturday is a chance to see if that holds true, right? Like, there's a lot of confidence, a lot of belief in this defense. Like, I genuinely get that sense from talking to the players about it. But now, do you trust the guy next to you? Because it looks like they have, right? But what does that look like on essentially a season-saving, a season-defining stage? Do you react the same way? What strides have been made in both trenches, right, since last year? So for me, that's always been the thing, is that I just don't feel like they have matched up particularly well just with kind of the more physical, powerful teams like a Michigan. But then again, John, how do you construct a roster where you do both when you are playing in this division where Ohio State is the more explosive athletes, Michigan's kind of more ground and pound?
Here's the thing. You know who else is really ground and pound and likes to run the ball a lot? Utah. Mm-hmm. They smoked them in the Rose Bowl.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yep.
Like, it's one of those things where I think probably this year less than any other, it's not as true, right? Like the stylistic stuff.
Yeah. Because this is a Penn State team that, yeah, is more,
this, it,
a little more Iowa,
like,
than Ohio State. Yeah, the offense. Yeah.
Right. Like, and the other thing is, like, Ohio State has its identity and has for years. It's a spread offense. They're going to try and beat you with athletes on the outside, and they're going to run it up the middle with elite running backs and break off big plays.
And they're going to have elite receivers.
Yeah, Michigan's going to be able to grind the ball down and eventually break off big plays in the running game because they're just bullying you up front and they you don't really have an answer. Penn State felt like it was just trying to match Ohio State's identity. And, you know, the discussion about, like, okay, how are you matching up with these teams? The problem with that is you're not dictating how the game is being played in that scenario, right? Mm-hmm. You are allowing the opponent to dictate how you play. And that is, like, that's not how the best teams in college football win, right? Like, Georgia isn't like, how do we match up with Alabama? They're like, no, we're going to build an elite defense. We're just going to shut you down. It's not going to matter, right? Ohio State doesn't look at Penn State and Michigan and go like, okay, we got to get these big, strong guys to deal with them. They're just like, all right, we're faster than you. We'll beat you that way, right? Like, those teams have their distinct identities, and it's felt like Penn State has kind of been searching for that in the James Franklin era, right? Like, what exactly that was.
Bit of an identity crisis, I would say, yeah.
Yeah, even the 16 to 18 teams, right? Like, it didn't feel like, yes, they relied on explosive plays, but they didn't necessarily have a specific way of getting it, right? They had great weapons at receiver who could go get the ball, same with tight ends, but it felt like a schematic advantage rather than an identity advantage, right? And I think that's kind of important to know who you are as a football team. And this year's team, more than any, especially defensively, yep, feels like it has an identity, right? They're gonna wreak havoc in the backfield on quarterbacks and running backs. They're going to try and turn the ball over, and they're going to bring immediate pressure. And if they don't get it, the corners and safeties are good enough that it's not going to matter, right? Like, they are an all around, like, high level elite defense. The offense, the identity is there, but it's not as prevalent.
It's not, right? Like, explosive. It's right, like, it's more of the, it's a little more Iowa than we thought, right? Like, that's the,
but even then,
they're, like, going to try to grind you out. And then James
couldn't do it against Ohio State though.
No, and he's like, our identity is going to be complementary football. And to me, that's saying, hey, you know that your defense and your special teams kind of have to shoulder the load here, right? Because whether or not last week against Maryland was an outlier, or if that's what you're going to be more of, we don't know. But I do think, yeah, there is something to that, to the identity piece. And the fact that here we are in November still talking about what's their identity, like, to me, that's kind, yep, of, I think, encapsulates where this whole thing is with the offense. But you mentioned the defense. And how they're going to wreak havoc. We still are not sure on Chop Robinson or Amin Vanover if they'll go this week. Again, we're recording this Tuesday night. Franklin said they're hopeful that both will play. Yes. Well, I'm also hopeful that I'll win the lottery, but here we are.
I remain hopeful that I'll win the lottery, by the way.
Oh, yeah.
Perpetuity.
But if you win, John, we would still keep doing this as a passion,
yes,
project.
Of course. Yeah. You know, I'm not kidding. Like, I've said this to a lot of people, don't believe me. Like, this job is fun. I would do this forever, right? Like, I, you know, this writing, all of it, like, it's a lot of fun. But yeah, no, this is, they kind of need Chop this week. Yeah. You know, they have, mm-hmm, elite defensive ends, but his presence only makes those other guys better. Especially in the Prowler package, it was funny. They lined up Dom DeLuca at,
yes,
at the spot where they would put Chop. And I was like, you know, this wasn't the first guy I thought of that they would put there. But it worked, right? Like, DeLuca was really good last week, to his credit. Someone really actually didn't, yeah, talk about probably enough post-game, like, how good he was in that game, mm-hmm, in part because the whole defense was that good. But no, they need Chop out there. They need, you know, Amid Vanover to be able to rotate in and give those guys some rest when they need it. But this matchup, to me, like, it's still all comes – like, I don't think Michigan's going to score more than, like, at most, like, 24. Right. So to me, this, and we'll get into our,
I was going to say, I just glanced down at my prediction just to see where we're, yeah.
That is not an indication of what I've predicted, by the way. But I do think, like, Penn State's defense is going to do what it has to do. And to me, that means it comes down to the offense. And do you think that there's going to be carryover from Maryland, or do you think that was more of a one-off?
I think there will be some carryover, but I don't know how significant it will be. Like, to me, I think it's going to be like, sure, they're going to connect on a few chunk plays, but, like, we're not going to see the fireworks that we saw against, no, Maryland. Like, that, to me, and that's just a difference in opponents too, right? Like, quality level opponents. Michigan is going to make you work for every yard. And to me, the thing that I'm still not so sure about is the interior of Penn State's offensive line. Like, to me, that both guards, the center, like, that's where I say, you know, I don't know, because until, and I said this after Ohio State, John, after I picked him to win, I said, until proven otherwise, like, I am not going to go all in on this offense, just because you can't, like, you gotta win me over and convince me that this is going to be you know, a better team, an improved team. Like James Franklin said, he will not apologize for winning. He also doesn't want people taking winning for granted. I will say, John, I think the fact that they are in Beaver Stadium has a massive lift here. Like, to me, that
it helps.
That's big. Like, the crowd is going to be absolutely nuts. Yes, it's a noon kick. We can say whatever we want about noon and whether we like it or hate it. Doesn't matter. The game's happening. It's at noon. I just think that crowd, almost like we see at with the whiteout, right, where it just somehow elevates this team to another level. I do think that matters for something, but I don't think we're going to see the offensive explosion, the fireworks. Now, you've kind of been on the Dante Cephas train all year with, oh, he's going to get it going. My whole thing has been, at some point, Nick Singleton's going to have a really big play that changes things. Well, we're running out of opportunities, so maybe this is that time for him.
Honestly, this is the last game where they can really change things, because they're going to beat Rutgers and Michigan State. Spoiler alert for anyone who hasn't watched the games that happen in the coming weeks. They're going to win those two games.
Yeah, John is not focused on going 1-0 this week. He's focused on the rest of the season.
No, that's the thing. I'm so focused on 1-0 that I've already declared 2-0 later.
Yeah. No, it's – and I'm with you. And I think it's like, this is – to me, this is one of those matchups that – this is why college football is great, right? This is why – you have your whole season, months of speculation, all off season. People have had this game circled. And you know what? Sure, you would have loved to have been, you know, undefeated when you got here, but you're not. But you have this golden opportunity, because as much as we want to complain, and Penn State loves to, about playing in this star-studded Big Ten East division, now you get a chance to kind of pull a Houdini act if you can win on Saturday. So it's a tough schedule. I was looking at the bowl projections, John, as of today, because I think a lot of people, I'm assuming, are probably going to pick Penn State to lose. So a lot of the projections are still the Citrus Bowl. So again, falling out of New Year's Six. So Ole Miss and the Citrus Bowl is kind of where things stand, which I think gives us a kind of a foray into the mindsets of some of the folks nationally who aren't on the ground like we are every single day covering this team. But yeah, I'm just not convinced that much is going to significantly change. Although I found James Franklin's comments interesting when he said, like they did against the Iowa game, they've got to be patient as an offense. To me, that was like a direct line to Mike Yurcich of like, hello, be patient out there, because it's, you know, it's going to be tempting, I'm sure. But you do have a quarterback who's more confident. You have a receiving core that's more confident. But I still, the interior of that offensive line to me is a little concerning.
Yeah, and you mentioned the New Year's Six Bowl. Like, I said this to you after last week's rankings came out. They were number 11. I don't think they're going to make it if they don't beat Michigan. Like, to be number 11 and to really only have wins left against Maryland, Rutgers, and Michigan State at the time, like, it wasn't exactly promising given the teams ahead of you. But if they go win this game, then the playoff is on the table, and then everything is, you know, turned chaotic, because then all you really need to make the playoff is Michigan to beat Ohio State, and they've done that.
Yeah. The game is in Michigan, right? That's the other part. Yeah.
It's in Michigan, and they're probably better this year. It's going to get chaotic. This game, though, is to me going to come down to whichever offense finally gets one. Right, like whoever can break a big play, and I don't think Penn State's positioned to do that just yet. I think, you know, if you tell me that Cephas and Lambert Smith each have like 70 plus yards, I'll tell you that Penn State probably is winning this game, right? Because that means the offense is clicking on some level. If you tell me that nobody on Penn State has more than 40 receiving yards, then I'm guessing Penn State probably isn't breaking double digits or more than a touchdown. I just think like there are a lot of indicators on this offense that we'll know. I'm guessing pretty early on Saturday how realistic a win is, because, you know, that Ohio State game was close throughout, but I don't know about you.
Like, one possession, as James Franklin likes to remind us, one possession. It never felt like they were in it.
Yeah, except when for the Curtis Jacobs called back play. Like when that happened,
that's the only moment.
Okay, like here we go, and then it gets called back.
And that is where my thing with this game is, Penn State is going to need a touchdown either on defense or special teams. Like, I think that is, you talk about what's their formula for winning, and sure, the offense has to play better. But to me, like, you're going to need a touchdown from one of those two units. And the crazy thing is, like, that could happen, right? Like, we've seen it with Daquan.
They're good at that.
We've seen it with Nick Singleton. Like, yeah, like, to me, that is, with his defense, like, to me, that is the thing where I say, yeah, they're going to need that. But also, it's probably not the craziest thing to say, because I could actually see that happening. Because you're right, that moment with Curtis Jacobs was the only moment where I felt like the tide was going to change for Penn State. And then and once
it felt
that
like
got
it was shifting
back,
drastically, to bring people down with this bad.
You know what, John?
Memory,
why don't you just open up that wound and I'll go grab the salt? Because man, that's yeah, it sounds like
listen.
What you're doing.
Listen, as everyone who listens to us frequently knows, I'm a Philly sports fan. I know all about the salt in the wound. It's my whole livelihood at this
point. You know pain. Yeah, it must be really hard watching a football team that good right now. Really hard.
Listen, go Birds. That's all I got for you. All right, let's go on the record here. I'm gonna make you go first because
last week I went first.
I won't share it, mine.
It is, it's written down.
It is written down on this post-it note in front of me. What I predicted. So you go first. What do you got?
My prediction for Saturday is Michigan 21, Penn State 13. I said all along, Penn State has to win me back with this offense. It was a strong showing against Maryland, but this is a different team. This is an elite team. Again, it's going to be, unless they get that defensive or special teams touchdown, it's going to be tough. So I'm going Michigan 21, Penn State 13.
I went even lower on the total. I actually haven't checked the line on this game recently. Again, thrown off by the whole week schedule. I have Penn State losing this one 13 to 10. I don't think either of these offenses are going to be able to move the ball that well. I think it's probably going to be a knockdown, drag out type fight. I don't think either. Like, I think Michigan probably hits on one big play and that flips it, right? Like, I could easily see this being a game Penn State leads 10 to 7 late and Michigan scores a touchdown, right? On the last play, whatever. Like, I can see these kind of things happening and it be, unfortunately for Penn State fans, pretty heartbreaking. But I do think it is going to be really close. I think it's going to be really tense. I think it's going to be a really good football game and a lot of fun to watch from the objective perspective.
Oh yeah, we're going to be rewarded with, I think, an excellent game. But I do think, again, looks like kind of perfect November football weather from what I've glanced at so far on top of that. So I don't think you have to worry about like the elements or anything crazy like that. But yeah, this is going to be a slugfest. Like, this is, if you're expecting a bunch of fireworks, this is not the game for you. But it's going to be a lot of fun. I think it's going to be absolutely insanely stressful for Penn State fans. But regardless of how it goes, we will be here after the game eventually. We will chat with you guys. Make sure you have the Nittany Dispatch at least by Sunday morning at the latest. That is the good thing about the noon kick, John. It gives us a little more time to get our work done, get our writing done. You can find me at The Athletic. You can find John at the Center Daily Times, the CDT. Anything else we didn't hit on, John, from our Tuesday edition?
No, I think that's everything. Like you said, we'll have an episode up pretty quickly, so you can either, talk through the pain or enjoy the joy after the game is over. But like I said, I'm looking forward to Saturday. It is going to be, I think a high-level football game between two good teams, which hard to complain about those kind of things, even with the offenses maybe not being as explosive as you'd want. Of course, follow Audrey on Twitter at Oddslander4. Follow me at John Sauber. That'll do it for this episode of the Nittany Dispatch. Thank you for tuning in. Have a great day.